At first glance, the children on the cover of I Saw Esau, the school child's pocketbook from Candlewick Press, seem to be smiling. But then you notice they're really smirking, and inside, they're engaging in all kinds of mischievous, raucous, unruly behavior that adults would find offensive. So it should come as no surprise that the co-conspirator in the mayhem is none other than Maurice Sendak, who's been, some would say, bringing out the worst in children in over 75 books. Winner of both the Caldecott and Hans Christian Andersen medals, he's chosen for his first pictures in 5 years to illustrate 174 rhymes edited by Iona and Peter Opie. It's a collection of the insults, riddles, tongue twisters, and jeers children have chanted for generations. I'm truly honored the generally reclusive Maurice Sendak could be enticed to leave his haven in Connecticut to join me now on New York and Company.
Thank you.
Thank you. In the past, we have talked, but always
yes,
by
have.
Phone.
Yeah.
What has enticed you out of your lair?
Well, this book is important. It's kind of summation of everything. Like for a full 40 years, just what you said, being the bad boy, although I thought I was a good boy, of children's books, and then having the great privilege of working with Iona. I wish Peter were alive, but I used to correspond when I was younger with them when I needed information about rhymes, Mother Goose rhymes. They're the only people in the business that elevated the children's book business, because everything to do with kids is reductionist and stupid and patronizing.
Uh-huh.
Here are two people who took it seriously, probably helped all of us in the profession. And so now there's a chance to do a book with Iona. So I'm out here to help.
And they you saw as kindred spirits because, as you say, most children's books are really written for adults, aren't
well,
they?
Well, yeah, kids don't have money. Kids don't buy books. Kids
so
have
we
no
buy,
power.
So we buy the books that we think the kids should read, which is the lessons we want them to have, be good,
yeah.
And stop annoying
well,
me.
Well, the sugary nonsense that we think the world is all about and that we want our kids to take in instead of helping them, arm them for what they're in for.
Well, how would you explain that what adults find rude and impolite are the very things that children find uproarious?
Well, it's paradoxical and strange because those adults once were these rude, crude, gross little creatures, okay? I think William Blake said something, which I can't recall correctly, about that iron door slamming behind the kids who go into school, okay? Then
uh-huh.
That's when they make patty cake and they're shaped and shipped out into proper, civilized, tedious human beings. And so that quality is lost or pulled out of the kids because it's inappropriate behavior.
It's when teachers tell kids, the sky is blue, not orange, the trees are green, not purple,
yeah.
And the kids get a message, perhaps the wrong message.
Well, they get a message by keeping their mouths shut about the trees being purple, that's for sure, because that's nuts. And then the other kids will start making fun of them, and it all goes into hiding. All those qualities go into hiding somewhere in the soul or other part of the body where there's a recess where those things can hide. And then some of us grow up to be artists and are congenitally malformed where those things never got hid.
Mm-hmm.
And we spend our lives doing it.
These rhymes are really children's own literature from
yeah.
The likes of Sticks and Stones May Break My Bones and to I Scream, You Scream, mm-hmm. We All Scream for Ice Cream. Why do you think they lasted so long? Because they are kind of silly.
Well, they're kind of silly, but they're extremely touching when you think that kids have no power whatsoever. You know, they have no money. They can't go move out of their parents' house. They can't even go uptown.
Mm-hmm.
They have no defenses because they're small. So these are magic chants. These are defiant screams in the face of a world that will take advantage of them. So they may seem silly to us, but they're marvelous because they're like a witch's charm.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to protect them.
And the reason adults have problems with them is because, as you suggested before, we like to think of childhood as a time of innocence, but
yeah.
That's not what it really
no,
is.
No, it's not what it really is. Well, of course it's innocence primarily, immensely innocence, which is why they have to be taken care of and why they have to be given these gross verses to protect themselves.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is really tough little wartime for them, just getting through childhood. Doesn't it amaze you we survived childhood? Amazes me.
Yeah, I was always surprised, even during my childhood, that people were telling me that this was the best time of my life.
Yes, right.
Oh, boy,
please,
this is
give
really
me a break,
bad, right?
Yes, yes. And they will go on doing that kind of thing. But in fact, it isn't. And of course, it is at times. I'm known as Morose Sendak, Mr. Sinister, who talks about the dark side. God, I hate that word, dark. But in point of fact, I'm very well aware, since I get immense pleasure from my work, of the bright side. I just don't neglect the other side. How can you?
You get feedback from kids?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. It's wonderful. They write letters. And they tell me things I know they don't tell their parents, because if they did, they wouldn't have had a right to me.
This has led to, as you say, people calling you morose, attempts to censor you.
Yeah.
They wanted you to put diapers on nude children. In this book, you had...
No. Nude boys.
Nude boys. Nude girls are okay?
Nude girls are okay. They went unnoticed. I did a perfectly drawn little girl child with an accurate vagina, and she went by unnoticed, and that told me a whole lot about our macho society. It was only the little boy who got in trouble.
Because you showed a little penis.
I showed a little penis, yeah, and a little scrotum, and the whole shebang. But that was offensive, whereas the vagina was not. So all the women who complain about that are correct.
Mm-hmm. That we do have this
Absolutely.
This double standard,
yep.
As far as censorship is concerned.
Yep.
But why is it even necessary to show people in the new kids in the
it's new? It's not necessary. It's appropriate. When verses are as bawdy as this, then you have to be as bawdy. If you're a good illustrator, you're going to go with the text. Why otherwise are you bothering to do this?
Mm-hmm.
So the verses are as ferocious as the Opie verses are, well, your drawings have to be ferocious. You have no other point. And when I did it at other times, like in the Night Kitchen, there's Mickey's having a dream. You do not dream with Fruit of the Loom underwear on. You are naked in a dream. So it was necessary. It wasn't arbitrary. I wasn't trying to titillate, and I wasn't trying to be controversial. I was just telling it like it was, I thought.
I'd imagine that sometimes it's hard to find the appropriate illustration for something like rain, go away.
Yeah, because it's banal. I mean, we've heard rain, go away forever. But in point of fact, the trick and the fun is, how do you interpret this in a way that is totally novel? It's totally different.
Mm-hmm.
That's the fun of being an illustrator.
This book is a departure for you in a number of ways. First of all, it's the first book since the 60s that you've illustrated somebody else's writing. Isn't that true?
Randall Jarrell was the last writer.
Pretty great poet, too.
The best.
Mm-hmm.
And his death was terrible. And it not only was the end of Randall, but it was the end, for me, of collaboration, because where can you go from Jarrell?
Mm-hmm.
And so I haven't done a book with somebody else until this. That's why it goes back to your original question, why have I schlepped out of the woods to come and talk about it?
Mm-hmm.
Because Iona is an immensely important person, and she's a terrific person. And it's an important work.
The drawings also seem looser than they have in the past, and more reminiscent of early 20th century newspaper cartoons.
Yeah, well, you see, I've had a variety of styles all through my career. And when the drawings got tight, it was because the subject was tight. I pride myself on doing the right kind of pictures for the right kind of text.
Mm-hmm.
These are so flashy and wild. You can hardly, takes your breath away just keeping up with them. So you got to draw fast.
So the drawings look very spontaneous.
Spontaneous and quick and uncorrected and boom.
And as a result, they actually match. They would look constipated if, in some cases.
Pretentious.
But it is different when you're doing your own writing.
Mm-hmm.
And over the years, the words and the drawings have worked hand in hand. So this is always harkening back to an earlier way of working.
Yeah, I like collaborating. When I did work on the stage for operas, you're collaborating with everybody. In the theater, you're collaborating in the films. I enjoy that as much as I do working by myself.
Mm-hmm.
But it's finding the right book that you want to collaborate on. That makes all the difference.
How much input do you have in the way the book actually is printed, how it comes across?
Entirely.
Because this book feels so great. You, the paper, for example, feels like it'll last a long time.
Yes,
kids
it will.
Can,
there's no acid in it. It's handmade. It's gorgeous. I have everything to say about that, along with, if you're lucky, a fantastic art director like Amelia Edwards, who's an American woman living in England, who designed this with me, spent time with me in Connecticut. Every detail of that book has been thought out and carefully planned so that it feels good. Mm. It even tastes good, and it smells good.
You bite this book?
Oh, yeah. And you can lick it and sniff it and take it to bed with you.
Because kids do put books in their mouths, and we have a thing
about
it. Yeah,
I used to go to bed with books. I used to love the feel of them. I used to hug them as I went to sleep. Good, solid spines, good, solid bindings, good sniff.
But there is something people wonder about, I'm sure, about an adult who spends all of his life doing things for kids.
Mm-hmm.
Well, a lot of kids' writers eventually do something that they say, well, you know, the time came for me to talk about adult mm-hmm. things.
See, I've always been talking about adult things, and I've never done these things for kids, so I don't feel I got to graduate. It was only my father who said, Gene, now that you won the medal, do you think they'll let you do a grown-up book?
Mm-hmm.
That was my father's problems. But in point of fact, I never set out to do books for children. I don't know how to write for children. I don't have children. I do what I do. Maybe it's a congenital malformation. Maybe the wiring is misconstructed, whatever. But my work seems to be appropriate for them. But I'm an elderly man. I write as what comes into my head. Mm-hmm. That it takes this form is the peculiarity of my gift. But I do not write for children. I do not aim for children. So I have nothing more to say. This is it.
But it is a blend of fantasy and reality. And that's part of, I think, of the appeal, don't you?
Of course. And that's why it also appeals to adults. When you think of poor mommies and daddies who have to read the same book thousands of times, and when they meet you, they still smile and they don't pull out a razor blade, you have to be grateful. Because mm-hmm. obviously it works for them, too.
My guest is Maurice Sendak, whose latest book, I don't know how many books you've done so far, but this is the, do you know?
I have illustrated about 87 books or more, but I've only written about a dozen of those.
Mm-hmm.
So I had a long and prolific career.
This book is called I Saw Esau, the School Child's Pocketbook, edited by Iona and the late Peter Opie, and it's published by Candlewick Press in an edition that can only be described as exceedingly handsome. And we will continue our conversation right after this. And my guest is Maurice Sendak, a Brooklyn boy, but mm-hmm. long residing in, you say, the woods of Connecticut?
Yeah, 20 years in southern Connecticut.
Reclusive for a reason?
Work. How do you get your work done?
Mm-hmm.
You know, when I was in New York, you're just pulled in every direction.
Maybe people called you on the phone and...
Yeah, and there are temptations. Go out, do this, see pals. There's nobody out there. Just me and my dog.
Well, but is that... at this point, you don't need to be a workaholic,
oh,
do
sure
you?
I do. Sure
aren't
I do.
You a multimillionaire as a result of all these books?
No. But in point of fact, I need to work twice as hard. I think really the way the world is right now... What, are you going to sit back on your laurels and just stay up in the country and write books for children? That's asinine, and it would be embarrassing. Considering the situation in the world, politically, socially, and every other way, people with track records and a certain amount of power creatively have got to be out there doing other things,
mm-hmm.
and I'm doing other things. I'm tired, but it's refreshing, because otherwise you get depressed watching television or reading the newspapers.
You have very strong feelings about political matters, and you've been a victim of censorship, something we all understand in broadcasting these days. Is there some way to talk about those things in your books?
Oh, sure. I mean, you have to do it subversively. You have to get past the censors. In children's books, children understand metaphor and symbol, so you can write straight for them.
Mm-hmm.
Takes a kind of sly and canny knowledge after 40 years figuring out how to get past the censors, but you can do it. They
and
don't
somehow,
even know it's there.
And somehow you don't have to say Jesse Helms' name?
No, you don't have to say Jesse Helms' name, but you can sniff him out in the work. You know, I'm now involved in having begun a children's theater, and I'm starting a film studio, so I'm spreading myself quite thin. But it seems to me this is the time to do it, and if the opportunities present themselves, well, then you got to do it. Mm-hmm. People talk about kids and talk about the next generation, lip service, so far as I'm concerned, for the most part. But people who are invested in kids, and if we don't raise our kids, what have we got, considering what we have now? So you got to work.
Your film studio is quite interesting because usually when you get involved in a project of this sort, they insist, the people in Hollywood, that you move out to Hollywood. After all, that's where all of the animators and the
producers, directors, right.
That's where they are.
Yeah.
So you've convinced them, you have that much clout to convince them to do this whole thing out of Connecticut?
Quite simply, I have a partner who is there and who is a trusted ally, John Carls, who works with me. But in point of fact, if I'd had to move out there or change my life, I wouldn't have done it. I mean, I can ask for what I want, and if I don't get it, I can live without it. I'm 63 years old, so I can live without it.
And what will these films look like? Well, is Rosie going to be in the movies?
She might. She might.
She's been in almost all your books.
Yeah, and she'll continue probably until I croak. but what I'd like to do, if possible, is make some few films, because it takes a devilishly long time to make films, so there probably only will be few, but films that have the kind of vitality that I hope the best of my work has had. And that is, I think, sorely missing from the screen.
Mm-hmm.
When you think of what children's movies is in this country, it's mind-boggling. So if I could make even a teeny dent, it'd be sure nice.
Well, I'm kind of amused that on the one hand, what you would like to do probably would be a corrective to what Disney did. And at the same time, you have often expressed great admiration for what Disney did.
Yeah, but that's not a contradiction. I've expressed admiration for what Disney did. The cutoff point is like 1938.
Uh-huh.
Okay, no, 40 with Pinocchio, which is a masterpiece. No, even a little
Snow
beyond
White?
With Dumbo. Well, Snow White is 38, then came Pinocchio, and then during the war came Dumbo, which is a masterpiece, but I think the last one. And after that, it's commercial schlock that went downhill. I have no respect at all for that stuff.
Because they felt that they had a pretty good take on what kids wanted?
They had an incredible take. Or Disney had an incredible take. I mean, Snow White is ferocious.
Mm-hmm.
And Pinocchio is fantastically brilliant. It's a masterpiece. I think Pinocchio and The Wizard of Oz are the two best films in America that have anything to do with children. But that's it.
Well, Snow White scared the heck out of me. My mother took me to it when I was a kid, and The Wicked Witch came out, and I cried, so loud she had to leave the theater.
Good for you. You're supposed to learn those things exist in the world.
Uh-huh.
Harridans and witches and old bitches exist in the world.
Mm-hmm. And that's part of the problem. We want the censors, the people who really think they know what's best for kids, want to protect them
From crying and being frightened. It's all right to let them watch television and see bloated corpses in Palestine and all over the world. That's okay.
Well,
or airplane crashes or God knows what.
And all those bullets going through people in the action films, blood spurting all over the place.
And how about the guy being pulled out of the truck in Los Angeles?
Mm-hmm.
And Rodney King. How many times did we see that? Or President Kennedy shot in the head? 9 billion times. Who stops them from seeing that? What do they make of that? What are we protecting them from?
What films do you think you'll be doing? Will they be adaptations of Where the Wild Things Are?
I don't know.
Or In the Night Kitchen?
We've just begun this, and I'm not ready to confront that. I'm more interested at the very moment in producing films of work of other people. There's a literature which Hollywood doesn't know anything about. And to bring works together to help, I'm a producer now. I'll get writers, and I'll get cinematographers and directors, people who I think are brilliant and should be turning their attention to things like this.
Mm-hmm. You get the feeling that you're involved in that kind of education in books of this sort, because as I was going through I Saw Esau, I said, oh my God, this is the Katzenjammer kids in some cases revived, and then I would see other illustrators. I even think there was a drawing that was inspired by Goya. I'm not sure, but
absolutely.
Okay.
You might even say taken from Goya.
So do you see yourself as educating children to this history of art?
No,
it's just for yourself?
It's
Is that the
me.
Great pleasure?
Yeah, it's for me. And if they get educated, that's a superb byproduct. It's not my intention.
Mm-hmm. Could you, do you think that this book lends itself to reading? After all, you didn't write these things, but are there certain children's rhymes and can we call this folk wisdom?
Sure.
Are there certain examples of that folk wisdom that lend themselves to reading on the air, things that will surprise listeners?
You mean out of that book? Oh, yeah.
If I pass the book to you,
yeah,
will you
look? It's a little arbitrary.
Well, that's fine.
Okay.
Arbitrary is what life is all about,
okay,
isn't it?
So I just flip?
Sure. If you see something that you...
How vile can I be?
Well, sure. You could be as vile as you wish. How about Kurt Vile? I understand that in some cases you have real problems when you're working on books. You discovered that you couldn't draw horses.
I couldn't draw horses. Yeah, the original title was Where the Wild Horses Are.
Instead of Where the Wild Things
Are. Yeah, it was a beautiful title, but when I got around to finally doing a dummy, no horses.
But you could draw anything, can't you?
No, of course not.
Do you have a problem with horses?
Hey, we all have problems. I bet even you have problems.
No, I have a perfect life.
Well, no, there are a lot of things I can't draw. I mean, the reason why the airplane in the night kitchen is made out of dough is I can't draw a proper airplane. But who can't draw a dough airplane?
Okay. But what about just taking a photograph of an airplane and
forget it. I don't like to draw.
You have to do it from your imagination.
Yeah, I don't like to draw from photographs. Why can't I find one that I really... How about bless the meat, damn the skin, open your mouth and cram it in.
All right.
Okay, that tells you like it is. Eeper weeper, chimney sweeper, had a wife and couldn't keep her. Had another, didn't love her. Up the chimney, he did shove her. Sam, dirty old man, washed his face in a frying pan, combed his hair with the leg of a chair. Sam, dirty old man.
I have a feeling that there is a certain life to some of these. New ones come along as well, or variations come along that kids today may not be saying some of the ones that sound very 19th century, but they'll be doing modernized versions.
Yeah. Oh, sure they will. And they're happening all the time. They make them up all the time. There could be another version of this 20 years from now. Mm-hmm.
Often cruel.
Oh, wait, how about this for cruel? Tom tied a kettle to the tail of a cat. Jill put a stone in the blind man's hat. Bob threw his grandmother down the stairs, and they all grew up ugly, and nobody cares.
That's evil.
That's evil.
Yes.
Great. And here's a funny, dirty one. Oh, the great cat piddled in the white cat's eye. The white cat said, "Cor blimey, I'm sorry, sir, I piddled in your eye. I didn't know you was behind me."
The censorship often is difficult to deal with because it doesn't necessarily come from the people who censor other things. It often comes from people who you would think of as your allies. For example, I heard that in California, Hansel and Gretel is a subject of controversy because it denigrates witches.
I didn't hear that. I don't mean to laugh. It's very funny.
But another case, Black Sambo, obviously, is a racist thing.
Yes, is a racist.
And how do we deal? And I remember reading Black Sambo in the first grade.
And I'll go out on a limb and say it is a great book. It's a great book. It's a shame. But it does, so it can't be.
And it hurts people.
It hurts people, so the hell with it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, you have a couple of characters who could almost be seen as autobiographical, or maybe I'm reading too much into it. For example, Rosie is once a Max.
Yeah.
Do you think of them in those terms?
No. I mean, I wasn't that brave. I wouldn't have yelled at my mother come hell or high water. I was much sneakier.
Mm-hmm.
But no, the only one I would identify with is Rosie. She was a Brooklyn kid. This was during the war in the 40s, me sitting out the window. I don't know what provoked me, but I must have unconsciously knew she was the Ortex, or the prototype kid that I was going to always admire. She was like the Maria Callas of Bensonhurst. And a homely kid and a tough life and inventive all the time, just making up her life as she went along. That's, of course, what attracted me.
Mm-hmm. One more thing, that we talked about how these drawings have gotten a lot looser. There was a time when your work was very, very tight.
But the previous to that, it was loose, and even during the tight time, it got loose when it was appropriate. You just can't say that.
Mm-hmm.
It was tight when it had to be tight. Outside over there is so tight, but that subject is like a wire sprung. I mean, it can't be loose.
So if you were doing another book where a tight-type drawing would be
appropriate, go back to tight.
Right back
Yeah. It's not a question of, gee, he's gotten loose, she's gotten tight. It has only to do with the appropriateness of the book you're illustrating.
Mm-hmm.
That's all.
Well, These illustrations are so lively and wonderful to look at.
Thank you.
It's amazing to me that they all come right out of your brain, because I couldn't draw people in all those complicated positions without at least getting a photograph or a model to send them.
It's a feverish brain in my head.
And the result of that feverish brain, the latest book, 80 plus, you said?
It's about the 88th book.
Wow.
Yeah.
Maurice Sendak, I Saw Esau, the School Child's Pocketbook, edited by Iona and the late Peter Opie, and published in a beautiful edition by Candlewick Press. And just one more thing. You wrote a child back who had sent you a picture, and the kid ate the picture.
Yeah, it was great.
He ate the letter,
the
right?
The ultimate compliment. His mother said, Bobby liked your postcard so much, he ate it. I mean, what more can a child say?
Well, if kids keep on eating this book, you'll sell a lot more copies.
All right. Eat and be well.
Thank you so much, Maurice Sendak.
Thank you very much.
Mountains divide and the oceans are wide, small.